And now, very rapidly, we change over so that we can listen to the Gene Shepherd program of January the 1st, 1975. Some fascinating New Year's resolutions from Gene, revealing a great deal of insight into his character. Enjoy. Here's Gene Shepherd. New Year's Day, January 1975.
Go on.
This is the first time I've said it this year. It is now 1975. That's my first thing. You know, it's going to take me well into April, though, to make that changeover on my checks. It really is like the other day. Happy New Year's to everybody. The other day, this actually happened to me, a little funny bit. I'm fascinated by the way our mind works with the whole memory track. You know, psychologists are doing more and more investigation of the memory process, which is a very interesting and little-known process. They don't really know. You know, people used to believe, and even researchers believe, that the mind worked in kind of a linear fashion, that an important thing you would remember. Unimportant things you wouldn't. In other words, the mind had a self-grading system. No way. In fact, there's becoming great evidence it's quite the opposite. that 75% of the people can't remember, let's say, getting married, but they all can remember the time that they got the bad car at the used car lot. And continue in minute detail of what happened that whole day that they went down there and bought that 53 Dodge that had the balsa wood differential. And, he can tell you in absolute detail. You say, well, do you remember when you were married, Charlie? Gee, God, where did we go? I think, and then, of course, his wife gets mad at him, but he's just being a human being. This is the way it works. And this friend of mine, I was with this guy the other day, and I had lent him some money one day. We were out having a lunch or something, and he needed some cash, so I gave him some money. And we're coming on the way back, and he stopped by his bank, and he says, hey, listen, would you mind if I made out a check for you? I said, no. So he says, the other day I was talking to Harry, and he's writing his check out. He says, I said to Harry, son of a gun, and he says, here, how's this? I took a look at it, and he says, but Clifford, you wrote 1956 on this. You dated the check 1956. He says, what are you talking? I see, look at him. He's talking away there, thinking about something else. His conscious mind was talking about Harry, and his subconscious mind wrote down September 12th, 1956. I said, what the hell happened to you in 56, Harry? Or Clifford. He said, oh, don't mention it. I said, what happened to 56? Oh, God. So it was a bad year. I'll tell you, I
just got out of college, and I met this girl. I said, wait a minute, stop. I don't want to know anymore. I know why you wrote 56. It just popped up. So it's going to take a while for people to write 1975. Has it occurred to you that our years are getting increasingly to sound like science fiction? I mean, you never thought there would be a real 1975. I mean, it's like you can't really believe that there's going to be a 3572, can you? Well, there will be. I mean, there really will. It's hard to believe that all of us will be gone and then not a trace remain of any of us. Not even our cities by the year 3572. And we will be a concept that will be argued over. Oh, there will be great arguments as to what actually happened, if it's even that important. You know, we always assume that what happens in our time is pivotal. Oh, yes, people keep saying the worst scandal in the history of America, Watergate. Oh, come on, they had some goodies in the past. And at that time, they were the worst scandal. But each time, I guess it's the way you tend to make your life more important by pretending that the crises of your time are all-time crises. You know, thousands of years from now, they're going to be arguing what Haldeman actually said to Ehrlichman on March 27th when they had the meeting in the Oval. No way, if they're even remembered. But this is 1975, and there's several things we have to do to complete our ritual of 1975. There's a first show for 1975, right? And I have, in the past, I've made certain resolutions. And I think that's not a bad idea. I think also this happens to be one of man's more prominent myths, and that is that each succeeding year is a unit in itself, and that we can say, well, 74 was rotten, but 75 will be good, or the reverse. Generally, we think of it as always, it's going to be better. It's the way the mind of man works. I can't ever remember one time ever since I was 2 years old and was able to lift the newspaper by myself and look at it. I can't remember one year when there wasn't one cartoon at least that showed, you know, an editorial cartoon that showed whatever the year it was, you know, this old man limping off the stage and he's got a ribbon hanging on saying the ribbon says 1954 or whatever the hell the ribbon said there, 1961. And underneath it, of course, you see 1965 coming in, say, the new year, and it's always a baby, real happy-looking baby. And underneath it, it says, good riddance of bad rubbish. Have you seen that cartoon a million times? We always tend to believe, what a relief, we're through with that rotten year. Remember, friends, that rotten year was the very year that you cheered your eyeballs were bulging. You were cheering so much when it came in. And now it's already a rotten year and you're glad it's over. Well, 75 bids fair to be a goodie. And all I can say, among my various resolutions that I'm about to propose that I'm going to do for this forthcoming year, many of you will celebrate them. I'm going to go straight this year. I'm going to go straight. I'm going to stop making snide remarks. I think this is a very important step forward, don't you? Do you realize that if I could learn to not make snide remarks, I could very easily become, at the very least, Mike Douglas by 1976? If I could really believe in Doty Fields, or is it Toady Fields? Is that it? Yes, this is part of my new, the new... No way I can do that? Well, I'm going to try. You can't put a man down. That's one thing that the humankind always has. He is laced with that sad thing called hope. Well, yes, he's also the same creature that created alchemy. He believed that he could turn lead into gold. Well, that's the problem, really. Basically, alchemy doesn't work, but we keep trying it. So what I'm going to do in the forthcoming year is I'm going to practice liking Victor Borge. I'm going to sit and watch old Victor Borge clips from various shows, and I'm going to learn to laugh at him. I'm also going to learn to laugh at Phyllis Diller. Now, that is tough for me. Well, no, I'm also going to do another thing, too. I'm going to practice. Now, this is going to be the hardest thing of all. Some people practice yoga. Well, Shepard practices laughing at Don Rickles. Now, this is part of my new image. So the I think by the end of 1975, I could very easily do an amazingly successful panel talk show. I mean, and I'll learn to love Zsa Zsa Gabor, too, before this year is out. I'm going to work like hell on it. Now, that's part of the new Shepard. Among other things, you want to hear some of my other resolutions? Okay. Some of my other resolutions are, I am going to systematically erase my memory. Now, my memory's got me into trouble. I keep remembering what news commentators said 2 weeks before any given crisis. Like, there's one news commentator who I've just observed recently who was furious when the last president put wage and price controls on the U.S. government. That was the last president. You remember him? He was really mad. He did a 10-minute blistering editorial proving that wage and price controls do not and never have worked in history. Just this past week, he gave a blistering denunciation of the current president for not putting on wage and price controls. Well, now, if I had not remembered the first one, I would have applauded him. Unfortunately, it's his damn rotten memory that keeps saying, you remember when that guy said, forget it. This will guarantee to lose your friends, too. If you keep remembering what some fathead around you said 2 weeks ago, and you remind him of it, when he says exactly the opposite at lunch, you are not only going to lose a friend, but everybody around you are going to think you're crazy. You do not wish to allow that to happen, right? No. Okay, so I'm going to work on the memory, and it's going to be a very short-range memory. So the most convenient kind of memory that a man can have in our time is a memory, a fantastic memory for far-distant past events, so that you can sit in with a crowd of guys and talk with absolute accuracy about the Green Hornet. Say, for example, that. And absolute accuracy. But do not, for heaven's sakes, do not have a memory that is, let's put it this way, an editorializing memory that says, come on, Stanley, you're out of your bird. Just 2 weeks ago, you told me that the greatest car in the world was Ford. Now, why did you say what you just said now? What happened in the 2 weeks? You blow a gasket? What happened? One of your valves get swallowed up? Is that what it is? Just tell us. What changed it? Don't ever do that. Now, that's a second resolution. I'm going to develop a memory that is erasable on the press of a button. I think this would be a great new gadget to bring out. It would just put psychiatrists out of business in 10 minutes. If you could have two little electrodes, you know, you hook on the red one on your left ear and the white one on your right ear, and you just turn up the gain, see? You know, this thing, you plug it in. You could even get one that's solid state, you know, battery operated, comes in 7 decorator shades, and you just turn it up, see? And you could erase just as much as you want and as far back as you want. You just keep going, see? And as it goes, it just keeps it. We call that deep erasure. As opposed to deep therapy, it's deep erasure. So the things go deeper and deeper till eventually you have no past at all. You are sprung full-blown, and you will be a new person. And you can use it every day. So you can erase what happened yesterday. And you would always be ready to leap and laugh at the same old tired jokes. This would be wonderful for a television viewer. I have seen at least 34 reruns of the same canon. And what's crazy, they've managed to do it all on the same night. They keep rerunning, you know. And if you could learn to not remember what Cannon is going to say the next time he turns on and opens the door and picks up the .30-06 rifle, if you can learn to do this, you'll learn to appreciate everything. Over again, renew it all. This is WOR New York, friend.
This is WBAI in New York, and we're listening to Gene Shepard's 1975 New Year's resolutions.
For a senior citizen rent increase exemption. For information and help, call Community Service Society 254-8900.
Let's see. I have another. Resolution, and I'm going to work very hard at this. I'm going to develop in me because it's very necessary for success at this time. I'm going to work on my, and we all have it. Some don't use it, some have lost the talent, but I'm going to work on my normal human attribute of intolerance and hate. The more you can become intolerant over all other political parties that you know that you don't belong to, and people who read stuff that you don't approve of, the better chance you have of becoming a top editorial writer for, say, New York Magazine, for example. I mean, and you have to assume, and by also approving of your, you know, working on this this particular quality, you have to work on your intolerance ratio. If you are too tolerant, friends, you're just going to be a nebbish. You're going to walk through your life. If you're too tolerant of everything, you're going to be a true loving human being, and that never pays off in the end. You must learn to have a little more intolerance for things, especially other ethnic groups. But don't take the wrong one. If you take the wrong one, then you will be labeled as intolerant. If you take the right one, you'll be labeled as a person with deep insight and a real concern over the future of our race. Okay? Nine. Just a little head, though, with that one. That's a dangerous one to fool around with. This takes a certain maturity, which all of us have rejected anyway. Maturity is a... What is another word for maturity? Old age, right? We don't want that. So we'll stick here with the kid land. Now, what else would you like to hear me do? Oh, I'll tell you another thing I'd like to... I'm working on this very much. I've got to learn to respect critics. We're living in a time when the critic is much more important than the product that he criticizes. You agree with that, Nick? Oh, yes. I mean, you don't think there's any play running on Broadway that's halfway as important as Clive Barnes, do you today? You think there's any guy right in the theater that's as important as Clive? Oh, you're kidding. Only dead ones. Chekhov, maybe. And it's doubtful. So I've got to learn to have the proper respect for critics. This is a very important thing. And because if you do have that respect for critics, you wind up getting good reviews. That's pragmatic, right? But that's what I'm going to work on, too. Pragmatism. Pragmatism is a very good thing to have. Now, what is pragmatism? Well, pragmatism is to pull off a caper. Let's say you're a principal in the Watergate scene, right? You pull off a caper. Well, what does a pragmatic person do? A person of ideals, of course. He says, well, I've done it. And that's it. I'm a rotten, guilty person. I've done it. And he sits in a can. A pragmatic person says, no, I didn't do it. I was the first guy to spot all the rottenness them guys were doing. And I tried to warn them. Well, I don't care what it says on the tape. See, what I really meant was I was trying to warn all them guys, and I don't have time to talk to the committee today because I'm on a lecture tour, and my new book is coming out next month, and I'm making a film of my life, too, you know, and I got to be on hand to help with the technical work. In other words, a pragmatic person can make of any scene that happens to him a commercial and an ethical property. Have you noticed? It was no trick at all for Mr. Dean to become a major American hero. And yet he was... Now, that's true pragmatism. That's the way to do it. You wind up on the Dick Cavett Show. Now, this is a very important thing to work on. So I'm going to work on my pragmatism all next year. And I think that by the late days of 1975, by, let's say, March of 76... I should be a full-blown pragmatist. I'll start working on it this afternoon. As soon as the dust settles and 1975 is here for good, I'll start working on it. Now I have other things that I'd like to work on. Among other things, from here on in, I'm going to my radio. Let's take radio shows. My radio shows. I'm going to give the time at all times on my show. We know that all good radio shows give the time continually. Do you agree with that? It's very important. For some reason or other, the American has to know that 40 seconds have passed since the last time the time was given. He is incessantly obsessed with time. And I'm going to go along with that. I'm going to give you the time. And I keep getting letters from people saying, Shepard, why don't you do like any good radio show does? How come you don't interview somebody? Well, all good radio shows we know today interview people, correct? Well, I have a great line of prospective interviewees lined up. And beginning next week, my first interviewee is going to be a wonderful lady. We're going to have 25, maybe 30 telephones in here. And we're going to let the slob do the show for us. So, you know, hey, Shepard, I'll tell you what the problem with New York is. The problem with New York is there's too damn many hippies. And not only that, I'll tell you this. The drug problem could easily be solved if all we had to do was bring back the death penalty. And when you got a country that produces a Watergate or whatever that thing was called, you can understand. This is the kind of thing all of you love to hear. For hours, if I could get these telephones installed here, we'd let everybody blat away all he wants to blat away at, and we would even accompany them with suitable theme music behind them. I think that's the newest move in the television, in the radio talk show, will be to produce each phone call that comes in. You know, play Hearts and Flowers behind the little old lady that says,
I just can't tell you how much your program needs to be, Barry. I listen to you every night since my husband passed away, and you provided me
little Hearts and Flowers behind. Played on an organ. Be kind of nice. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a better new year. And I also, another thing, too. I'm going to occasionally play a record. This is important. No good radio shows should be guilty of not plugging records. And I'll plug whatever is around at the time. And I'll do it with vim and gusto. And I'll not call it Acme Music. I won't do any of those bad things. Right, Nick? It's important. Okay. Now, let's see. We've taken care of that side. If you notice, there's going to be a fantastic new scene here. Another thing that I'm going to do, and this is something that I've been, I must say, a bit remiss in the past, and I should really do it with a little more work. I should work at this. And that is, I don't know quite how to say this. This is touchy. Let's bring it right out. This is 75. This is the time to bring out honesty. A pragmatic man would say what's there. See, only if it's good for what ails him. Now, I have been accused by certain salesmen of having something in my voice. That's the way they say it. Something in my voice that says that I am not entirely and totally sincere in all of these commercials that I've had. You disagree with that, Nick? Well, I have loudly disagreed with him. In fact, the other day, there was a salesman come up, and he says that to me. He says, you know, there's just something in your voice. You read very well, and you get this nice delivery, but there's something in your voice. Mr. Grubbage was a little upset that there was an implication in his voice. He couldn't quite pin it down. You know, Grubbage buys a lot of time at the station. You know what I said to him? I said, but Bob, there is nobody in this station that is more sincere. In fact, you come up and watch me record some of these shows. The last time I did a Grubbage commercial, I honest to God was crying right there. And he says, oh, come on now. He said, maybe that's what Grubbage was complaining about. He doesn't like to have somebody crying when they're doing his commercial. I said, no. I was crying out of gratitude. I believe in Grubbage. I believe in Grubbageism. I believe in the future of all Grubbages. And in fact, I have a pin that I have tied. Oh, well, gee whiz, Bob. So, I'm going to work on it. I admit, Nick, you were very nice to say to me that I sound sincere to you. I work on it. I tried. But in the future, I am going to deliver a commercial with a ringing note of total sincerity. And it's going to be sincerity based on honest and proper humility. When a man is faced with a sponsor, there's no question who is the boss. And there will be proper humility is something else. We're going to have to work with these other guys on that one. However, what are some of the other things that I'm going to work on? You'd be surprised. Okay. One of the things that I'm going to work on in the future is I'm going to say good things about radio in spite of the obvious evidence to the contrary. Now, why am I going to do this? Well, because, again, if one is properly pragmatic, one does these things. A pragmatic man does not argue why he does a thing. He argues only the technique used in doing it. That's important. That's right, Nick. Stop it. You get us both canned doing that. You don't have to worry about it. But, well, I don't either, actually. That's what makes them mad, too. See, and that's another thing. That's another thing. Anybody that's listening out there who is with the station, I'm going to work on proper gratitude. This is something, and we call it in the trade Bob Cratchitism. And I'm going to work on tugging at the forelock, or is it the fetlock you tug? Is that called the fetlock or the forelock? I've always been confused. Horses have fetlocks, right? Okay, well, then I'll tug at the forelock. And I'll let the horses tug at their fetlocks. The hell with them. Pragmatic man would never say that. There may be horse lovers out there who'd be totally... Incidentally, that's another thing. I'm going to practice pretending that I like cats. I have noticed that anybody in any media who ever implies that he finds a cat less than God's truly majestic ultimate creature, he is not in that business long. I knew a guy that was driven out of the pulpit. Because, yes, an ordained minister of the Episcopalian stripe who was driven out of the pulpit of a very eminent pulpitage. Is that what you have when you're in the pulpit? A pulpitage. That's it. A pulpitage. Very good. Sounds like a rare Indian fruit. But nevertheless, he was driven out of his post in this church because in the middle of a sermon, which he was delivering, in fact, it was a sermon against sneakiness, he casually referred to a cat as an example of sneakiness. Forget it. He was D-U-N, done. Now, he could have said that about a dog, but the cat fanciers are a tight and fanatical and a highly placed group. They will write letters, and they will write endlessly. Now, I will learn to like cats. In fact, I may even, we may even institute a cat news hour once a week where I give cat news, various eminent cats, what they're doing, rumors about what cats are pregnant, you know, prominent cats, gossip about what Morris's newest picture is going to be, you know, all these various things. It would be kind of good. Now, other things that I'm going to work on are more, I suppose you might say, ephemeral and personal in nature. For one thing, I'm going to learn to walk in a different way. People have said to me, you have a rather aggressive walk. You look like you're leaning into the wind. And there is a certain element of mako about your walk. Now, I didn't know what the hell mako meant. You know, I have to work on that, too, because that's a New York phrase. I mean, mako is anything that's bad. That's called mako. So, nevertheless, I said, what do you mean? You mean I walk because I'm leaning over? And the guy says, I don't know. That's an aggressive walk, Shepard. And I said, well, maybe it's because of that time I had this tendons pulled in playing a football game, and I admit that I do lean over sideways. I look like a figure L when I'm walking sometimes, yeah. He says, no, it's not that. There's something about it. So I'm going to work on a respectful walk, and I'm going to be respectful to all of my betters. That's something that one doesn't hear much in this day and age, the term betters. And I'm going to be respectful to them. Now, what does that mean? Well, I'm going to send Christopher Lehman Haupt a birthday card. I don't know when the hell his birthday is, but it doesn't matter. I'll just send him a birthday card. And I'll sign it an admirer. Well, who's Christopher Lehman Haupt? He's the reviewer for the New York Times. I've got a book coming out next year, so I'm going to have to start doing the right stuff now, right? So let's see. Another thing, too, around the water cooler here, I'm going to have to learn to... that's where the forelock tugging is going to come in, right around that water cooler, because the other day I was at the water hole out here, see? And I walked up and said, hurry up, quick, I got to get a drink. I'm going to do the show. And this guy turned around, and he was a high executive here. Now, I don't know what he was doing at the water cooler, because they have an executive water cooler up on the other floor there. That's the one that gives out with the beer and all that. And we have one that just gives New York water. So I have to learn to tug at the forelock. How do you do that, by the way, Nick? Have you ever seen it done, actually? Oh, wait a minute now. Come on, that looks like a guy getting arrested for peddling or something. Grab him by the head. Now, how does a man tug at his forelock and not make it look like some kind of a ridiculous tick, like you've got some nervous disorder that's giving you trouble? Do you do it before you say hello, or do you do it after? During. You say hello and tug at the forelock at the same time. I see. Do you bob a head like that, or you just pluck at your hair like that? You bow. It's a slight bow as you say that. Now, when you say, no, these are all important things. After all, we're entering very perilous times, and a lot of people are going to be, you know, we're entering a new day, a new era. And I say that by 1990, we'll be well advanced towards a retrogression move towards medievalism. Do you see that? All right, serfs. Absolutely, man. And no wonder George Meany is so mad. He's walking around yelling like hell and nothing's happening. I'm looking for the day when every major corporation has all of its serfs have a brass ring around their neck. Yeah, or their nose. Well, it depends on the sex. And, you know, with the name of the company inscribed on the side there, in case of an emergency, call the International Widget Corporation. This object is a property of the Widget Corporation. I could see many things coming in 75 that I'm looking forward to. And I'm looking forward to a new day. You notice the note of hope that's in my voice. See, I think this is important, that I have a feeling that we can change. I'm going to change. Now, I promised, I got a letter here 2 weeks ago from a woman who said, I listened to your show, is what she said, you know, right at the start. She said, however, incidentally, all people who listen to your show feel not only adequate, but they feel in a favor position to tell you how to change your show completely. which, by the way, is self-defeating, because they probably wouldn't listen to you then. However, she says, there's one thing that I absolutely refuse to listen to whenever you do it, and that's when you sing those ridiculous songs. Well, okay, all over. 1975, no more Jew's harp. Okay, Nick? No more kazoo. Nope. I'm giving this kazoo, that my own kazoo is going to the New Jersey Cultural and Arts Museum in Teaneck. And they're great there. They have things over there. They're very important. They have a tie that was owned by Ed McMahon. He actually did it. They wore it on one of the shows. They have a girdle that Zsa Zsa Gabor wore one time. And all kinds of objet d'art. And this is going over there. So I'm not going to be playing this kazoo anymore. I'm deferring to all the complaints of the listeners over the years. No more kazoo. No more juice harp. There will be no more singing of ridiculous songs. However, you must give me this. Since I enjoy this inordinately, and I cannot explain to you why I enjoy it. It's just one of those little crotchets. Tonight, just as the last time, I will not sing any more songs. I will not play any more juice harps nor kazoos in 1975. This will be the last time. Please, Nick. This is the last time. Let's go. Oh, bear missed the train. We're all together, gang, now. Let's go. Oh, the bear missed the train. I said the bear missed the train. Oh, the bear missed the train. And now he's walking, puffing out of those bones. Oh, the bear missed the train. Ah, bear missed the train. Oh, the bear missed the train. And now he's walking. He's walking. He's walking everywhere. All right, last kazoo of the year. too bad. That's it. Out. All that stuff. Going. It's done. Break up that record. It's done. Over. Forget it. That's a relief. I tell you. No. There's times when you just got to admit that your self-indulgence, you just got to go. Discipline. That's the name of the game. So, in deference to those thousands of... They're right. Remember what I'm saying. This is in keeping with my new humility and pragmatism. Those thousands of very well-meaning listeners who've written me letters on blue stationery with purple ink, who've given me advice, unsolicited. And that's the best kind. Unsolicited advice to get rid of that damn kazoo. And you know what you can do with that jew's harp? I have done both of those things. It's not comfortable, but I did it. And no more singing. That's over. Now, I'm also going to do another thing. I have offended many well-educated, well-meaning listeners over the past years by continually telling stories because I'm interested in it. You know, that every man has a flaw. Oh, yes. No. Let's admit this. This, in keeping with the new humility, every man has a flaw. It's hard to believe it. Even Gore Vidal. Well, that's true. Okay, all right. Let's put it this way. Most men have flaws. Most men have flaws. So I concede that I do, which is not a good thing to do if I were truly pragmatic. You never admit you have a flaw. You must continually harp on the flaws of others. Your flaws either do not exist or they're so minimal as to not even be important. Correct. This is part of it. But this is, remember, this is New Year's Day, and it's a time for honesty, and candor is a better word, because candor isn't the same as honesty. Even you, Nick, who teach English, know the difference. Right. Candor is not the same as honesty. We continue to confuse them in our time. So some guy that shoots off his mouth, just blats it all over the place, is called honest. Actually, he's just being candid. There's a difference. He can also be totally wrong, but candor is not a good quality. And honesty can get you maybe from 1 to 10 if you're too honest when you're being quizzed by the wrong people. So you have to walk a very fine line. So among other things that I'm going to do in the forthcoming year, I have worked on a well-developed program, self-discipline within my own self. That I'm not going to ever mention sports. There's nothing that makes my listeners more angry than to tell them that I enjoy a ball game. This infuriates people. No, a truly pragmatic man will say, you are right. Of course you're right. Oh, natural, you're right. Oh, yes. A pragmatic man always claims that the guy who's on the other side of the table is right. What he does about it, though, is another story. So what I'm going to do is no more baseball stories. None at all. No more stories about football. That's right. There will be, however, some well-considered reminiscences about my friend Bobby Fischer. We will talk about chess. That's a proper subject, don't you agree? Well-reasoned people. And we'll also steer clear of any implications that there is a difference in culture between the Midwest and the East, with obvious implications that one or the other is superior. Since we are in the East, naturally we will assume that the East is superior in all qualities to all other parts of the nation, in all conceivable manners. You agree with that? Oh, yes. I will also pretend other things, which are not going to be easy for me. But one of the things I will pretend is that I enjoy Broadway musicals. That takes a lot of doing. Have you ever that reminds me. May I tell you a brief story about that one time? That I want that one. You know, feckless. Have you ever done something when you were a kid, when you were about 17, took a girl out someplace, and you couldn't? It just got out of hand completely. I mean, I took this girl who I had understood was interested in music. She was really into music. And I took her. Oh, do we have a commercial in there? Two of them. Oh, well, in keeping with the new shepherd, we will never miss a commercial. In fact, to help that problem, we may even do many of them twice, just gratuitously. Maybe three times in an evening. Please, let's start with this one. And watch how well I sing this commercial. And watch the sincerity with which I deliver the copy.
Someday you'll own. Someday you'll own home. Oh, sooner or later you'll own generals.
I just want you to listen to this. Friends, at times in your life, when you're walking down the street, you say to yourself, there must be something. Something somewhere that a man can truly believe in. All men need something to believe in. And I can only say, without qualm or without equivocation, the only thing in my life that I truly believe in is my set of white wall generals. God, I love them. I go home at night and I just pat them and I look at them and I say, and I say proudly, sooner or later, yes, you're all going to do it. Sooner or later, you long generals. That was fine, wasn't it? Really good.
Your dollars to the American Korean Foundation will not only help impoverished farm children of Korea to a better future, but also those in Vietnam. This is because the American Korean Foundation has a unique farm in Korea where modern agricultural methods are taught, where a bank of animals and seed are maintained from which poor families can borrow to start income-producing projects at home, where agricultural scholarships are given to needy, deserving children. From this modern agricultural laboratory, the American Korean Foundation brings the expertise learned in Korea to Vietnam as well. It's a sure thing. It's been working for many years. But your dollars are needed to help the hungry feed themselves. Not for just this once, but to give skills that provide for a whole lifetime of good living. Support the American Korean Foundation. Box 103, Grand Central Post Office, New York, 10017.
I'll tell you this, friends. Justice, you'll be stunned by what happened after a cop's brutal murder in the onion field. Joseph Wambaugh's real-life suspense bestseller is now available as a Dell paperback. And that's exciting news. And here is another book from Dell that we know definitely will interest you.
The greatest bestsellers. Books like Rebecca.
I'm doing pretty good, right,
Exodus,
Nick?
Exodus, Hawaii. You don't just read.
You notice my eyes.
You live them. Beulah Land by Lonnie Coleman is that kind of book. A sensational bestseller compared by many to Gone with the Wind. But Beulah Land is so frank it could only be published in our time.
Our time.
Beulah Land. The story of a great plantation in all its outward splendor. Land, a Dell paperback bestseller.
When you write about a plantation today, Southern, it always has to have inner decadence. Have you noticed that? That's called literary tradition. A lot of things. Wouldn't it be great if once you wrote a novel about the outward signs of decadence in this great Southern mansion, and yet the inner core of true strength and total devotion to highest ideals of humanity are revealed in this newest book? Where did I go again? I thought I was going to stop this stuff. At least no Jews are. That went down in the airship. Well, happy 1975, gang. And let's just hang in there and see what happens. Don't forget that. Get out that tin hat. You know, I think they're going to need it this year. Get it cleaned up. I got my gas mask. I got new cartridges in my gas mask. Yeah, I'm ready for it. Yep. Laid in the stock of K-rations. It's going to be a good year, gang. Great year. It's always good to bear the breath, you know. Yeah. Let's be honest. Play it out. And that concludes tonight's salute to you down. I remember him. This is WOR.
This is WBAI New York. Gene Shepherd from January 1st, 1975, which wraps up today's Mass Backwards. Back next week on Sunday night at 7:30. Sunrise coming up next here on WBAI New York.